हरिः
ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Hi. Okay, so then, Charujit, if you can read, then we're good.
Okay, so we're on Adhyaya 1, Adhikarana 3. And it looks like we are... So he was quoting Sridhar Swami. And then after the paragraph mm-hmm. that we concluded on, there's one more paragraph. Karma is useless.
By Jivaka Swami?
Yes. But okay. It looks like it's still a quote from Sridhar Swami because it's still in the same line.
Okay.
And it's bold. And then the next one will be Jiva Goswami. So this is still Sridhar Swami, quoted by Jiva Goswami. Karma is useless unless it leads to bhakti, and jnana is useless if not performed along with bhakti.
Yeah, so one of the things there is that it should be is that, that not that karma can lead you to bhakti. It itself doesn't have the power, but when it's being done in support of bhakti as a secondary, aspect of service, then it can help lead you to bhakti. So in other words, bhakti will lead you to bhakti, and you can do that through the direct activities or using the secondary religious activities to support the direct activities, then it will work. So it's bhakti that makes it work. So therefore, when it says karma lead you to bhakti, it means the karma has to be engaged in devotional service. Otherwise, it will not lead you to bhakti. Yes, please.
Okay, so then Jiva Goswami quoting Srimad Bhagavatam 1:5:15. You have created a great disturbance by teaching a condemned subject to people attached to material enjoyment in order to make them accept dharma. Thinking that what you taught them is real dharma, they do not consider giving it up.
Yes, because thing is that, as Krishna says in the Gita, that you have to give up all religion and surrender unto me. In other words, all the religious aspects, because they're all secondary to bhakti. Bhakti is the primary. That's the sad dharma. And then these things are given as dharma, and they actually just take them as dharma. You know, it's just like in the contemporary environment that you see in the Abrahamic religions, they'll take the secondary aspects as the main. If I'm a good person, I'm a nice person, I do all my duties, I take care of my family, I pay my taxes, I don't harass the neighbor's dog, you know, all these things, then I'm a good person. And I'm a religious person, you know, and that religiousness and spiritual are synonymous in most people's minds. But religion only becomes spiritual when it's connected to spiritual or to transcendence. So when it's done in devotion, then it takes on that spiritual quality. But if it's just the engaging the senses in these different aspects, because they give you the fruitive result you're looking for, that's not sad-dharma. And so people don't want to give it up because it gives them their fruitive result or gives them their detachment in that. And so they hold on to those, that these are important. But Krishna says, no, those have to be given up in support of true bhakti. And so given up means they have to be offered to bhakti. So what can be offered, what can be used in the service of bhakti, that then stays. And if it can't be used in bhakti or doesn't have any value, then that's what's given up. It's easy. It's just like, okay, I go into the kitchen and I have so many utensils. I want to peel the potatoes. So I give up the knife. I give up the grater. I give up the hammer. You know, I give up the little scrubby thing, you know, in the sink. Like that. All those things are given up because they don't work for peeling the potato. I accept the potato peeler. And then the potato peeler is used. Now, having used the potato peeler, now I want to cut the potato. I have to give up the potato peeler to now use the knife. And so So they're saying, no, no, but, you know, it would be irreligious to give up the potato peeler. No, but the religion means it does its particular work. What work can that potato peeler do? Peel potatoes. So when you're peeling potatoes, you use it. If you're not peeling potatoes, you don't use it. So therefore, then it's given up, and now the knife is accepted. You know, or you've peeled it, now you want to grate it, so the potato peeler is given up, and the grater is accepted, not the knife. You could say, no, no, but I can cut it super thin, just like grating, and that, no. Use the grater. You know, or you don't use, or you want to cut it very fine, you say, well, I'll use the grater. No, you're supposed to use the knife. No, but we're cutting it very small, so if I grate it, it'll kind of look like it's julienne cutting, you know, so, no. So one has to be very, very, you know, in practical life, one does this all the time. You're doing anything, you use the proper tool that fits the work that you're doing. You never not do that. Right? I mean, people who don't know or uneducated or stuff, they may do stuff like that. But otherwise, you're using a nail, you use a hammer, using a screw, you use a screwdriver. And are you using a staple, you use a stapler. So whatever it is, you're going to use the proper tool. So that's all it is, but you're doing it for a particular work. So the work of the soul is bhakti. So then that tool that works for that service in bhakti, that's the one that's used, but it's only secondary. It only is getting you closer on the path of bhakti. It's only bringing you forward in that devotional element as an assistant. It's not the main thing. But people not knowing that there's actually a higher position of dharma or sadharma, they take it that the dharma I'm doing is the real thing, so they won't give it up. So therefore, then we see Jaimini and his exposition on karma. And so people don't give it up. And in one sense, that he is making the thing of they don't give it up, that's all right. If giving it up, they'll become irreligious. But to give it up to become a pure devotee, that's fine. He'll agree with that. But people don't understand pure devotion because it's hidden. It's not well understood. Does that make some sense? So in other words, dharma is the tools that are secondary tools that are used in the service of the real dharma, you know, or devotional service. Like that. Does that make some sense? Yes, please, Jagadish.
It sounds like Jiva Goswami makes a very strong point, is that the active principle in bhakti, karma, yoga, ogyana is bhakti, but it takes those forms. And of course, one form is natural form, and other forms, they're forms, but it's not actually natural, but still it's driven by bhakti alone. Is that correct?
Yes. But also in the natural, that they're natural tools. But if you give them more credit than being tools, that's where it's unnatural. You know, it's just like, let's say somebody gets something new and they're really, really attached to it and really enamored by it, you know, especially if it's something, let's say, expensive or something they had to work hard for. They don't want anyone touching it. They don't want anyone dealing with it, nothing. So it's very unnatural in their dealing with it because they're giving more emphasis to the item than what it deserves. Right? Does that make sense? So when it's balanced, then it's used for what it's for. Let's say someone got a new car, some fancy car. He doesn't want people touching it, leaning on it, you know, anything. And so, but the car is just to drive you from point A to point B. That's what it's for. So therefore, the person that having that kind of status of car is natural for him, it's just a car. You know, he takes care of it. He knows how to do those things because if he doesn't take care of the car, he can't get from point A to point B. So therefore, you take care of the car in as much as it helps you doing what cars are supposed to do. So then it becomes natural. So you see is that the pure devotees then using the, you know, these aspects of religion, you know, that are mentioned, you know, varnashram, study of the scriptures, austerities, charity, all these different aspects, then those are all just naturally for the devotee wherever it comes up. But bhakti is the actual only engagement for the soul. All other things are illusory engagements if they're done on their own without bhakti. But if they're in line with bhakti, then they're just like various tools that you use. You know, that's all. It's just like Krishna's milking the cows. Then he puts the rope around it, ties the back legs, then uses a bucket, you know, these kind of things. But if he's not milking the cows, then the rope stays tied on his shoulder. You know, he doesn't take it out to, you know, tie up something else. Right? So that's the way it works. It has its, everything has its natural position because it's all expanding from Krishna. Then when you use it in devotion towards Krishna, that's the actual way, because it's all Krishna's. It's to be always used in relation to Krishna because it is related to Krishna. It is Krishna. The potencies are Krishna. The transformations are Krishna. Everything's Krishna. So therefore, unless you use it in connection with Krishna, and unless it's used with devotion, it's not complete. You could say, okay, we use it mechanically for Krishna and all that and get what we want. But the Ananda aspect means Krishna's pleased. Therefore, we're pleased. He's only pleased by devotion. Therefore, then it's only in its natural state when all aspects of the existence of it, the action that it performs and the results it can get, and it's done to please Krishna, for Krishna's pleasure, then it takes on the real you know, nature that is there. Then it's natural, because now it's being used you know, in that way. Does that make sense, Jagadishji? Yeah? So it's just a matter of a rewiring, because we're so used to religion means, you know, all these rituals and this and that. No, religion means the nature of something. And the nature of everything is defined by Krishna, because it's all coming from him. And so we also, as souls, you know, our nature is important as much as it's in relation to him, you know, that direct relationship. We have importance even if we don't, because of our direct relationship with the Lord. But we don't get to take advantage of it as long as we are in that illusion that we are separate from this, that we're something else, you know, other than Krishna's servant. So it's just a matter of switching the thinking where everything's seen from that perspective of how it's Krishna's, how it relates to Krishna's. Krishna's given the nature of everything, how that all works. When that is there, then everything is seen in its natural position. And then you don't have to make the distinction. Like Mother Yashoda does so many things for Krishna. You don't have to say this is primary, this is secondary, because it's all just being done out of her natural affection for Krishna. So you make no distinction. Just like a expert chef, you don't have to make a distinction between his cooking, his recipes, his, you know, techniques, the tools he uses, how he uses them, and all that. It's just all considered one thing. He's cooking, you know. But if someone doesn't know and this that, then you make the distinction between, well, that's not cooking the way that you're, you know, doing things and this and that. You know, it's not cooking because these are secondary and you haven't brought them in line with the primary yet. You know, you have a very small fire, you're cutting everything very big. It won't cook. You have to cut everything really small. You know, then it's in line with cooking. Oh, but I like them big, you know, but he won't cook. Oh, we'll see. You know, maybe it'll cook. No. Is that okay? Yes, okay. Yes, please.
So it seems that, and this didn't really occur to me until you were just saying that, that for us, the details are quite different than the principle, but actually in the spiritual world, since they're always connected with the principle, the details always connected. So it's not as if a detail would be a distraction for them where it is for us.
Yes, because for them, pleasing Krishna is the only, the be all and end all of their life. And these are various ways they can express it. So in other words, the devotional activities and the situations and tools that can be used in those activities, those are ways of expression of the love. So that way the love can be expressed in unlimited ways and unlimited situations and everything like this, eternally. Well, for us, because we remove the aspect that's about Krishna, then all we're left with is the situations and the tools and what you can do with them to get effects. And so we take that as the all in all. But if you ask, say, everybody, it's about themselves. People talk about, oh, we're doing it for the society. That no, everybody is doing everything simply for themselves. That's it. There is nothing else. They may identify with the greater society, and because they identify when the greater society is benefiting, they feel happy. But it's only because they identify with that greater society. They don't, then they don't care. Because you'll see, it's like, oh, yes, it's for equality is for everyone, as long as they're the people that agree with me. They don't agree with me, then they don't get the benefits. So it's not about everybody. They only say everybody because they're throwing it out there, trying to get everybody on their side. But in actuality, when it's applied, it's only those who agree with them. And that is, they agree with them very willingly. And you're willing to follow their direction and authority, then it works. If you're unwilling in that, but it takes time to convince you, you're convincible, then you're there, but you're considered second class. And so then you're going to know that until such time as they're convinced that now you're, you know, up to standard. So it's completely self-centered. They just use these philosophies to make it look like it's not about themselves. Well, we have no bones about saying it's self-centered and this and that. And so people will get bent out of shape about that. But we'll say it's a mature world. Everything's self-centered. There isn't anything going on here that's real. So the things that look real are the ones that are in line with what activities in that situation would the residents of the spiritual world do. And so, but they're doing it to please Krishna. Well, we're not doing it to please Krishna, but at least we're copying that in this situation, in these relationships, in these activities, this is how it would be done. Then you're getting credit because at least, okay, the sad aspect, the chit aspect to some degree, sad aspect and the chit to some degree, you know, you're in, it's closer to what the residents of the spiritual realm do. But in actuality, it's nothing to do with them because they only do it for pure bhakti. But at least on the secondary platform and tertiary platform like this, then there is some relationship there. So therefore, then if someone came along and said, no, but you should do this to please Krishna, you're already doing those activities. Just like you tell any Indian, you have to accept Shastra, you have to follow Guru, there's going to be sadhana. That means getting up early in the morning, not staying up all night and partying. And no, nobody will say no. No one say, well, that's not me. And, you know, we're different. And everyone's unique and like that. They won't say that. They'll just go, yes, because they're doing that anyway. But it's not necessarily connected with bhakti and Krishna. And so, therefore, that's why it's given. That's why it's called pious, because someone who's pious, add that touch of Krishna, and it can make sense to them, and they can practice it. Well, those who don't have that piety, then the philosophy may make sense, but the religion doesn't. And so it'll make it hard for them to practice. Does that make sense? Because then, you know, all these different things that we do, no one wants to do it because they didn't do it before. And we're Westerners, and why we should do these things? It's not natural. It's kind of like, being identifying with the body is natural for the soul? That's foolish. But because people want that, then they'll go, oh, yes, yeah, he's right. You know, all these years I've been forced to myself when I was so unhappy. But now that I've just relaxed and I just do what I want, and whenever I want, I chant or add something in of Krishna, you know, now and again. And, you know, we got a new picture the other day. It was really nice, you know. And that, then we say, this is better, when it's not. Because there's no sacrifice, there's no surrender, there's no, you're surrendered simply to how I feel when I feel. So how is that bringing you closer to Krishna? It's nice that, you know, there's some little bit of connection. That's nice. It's better than not. Yes, and we'll encourage that. But don't in any way, shape, or form try to say it's equal. And if you say, no, but for me, this is what I can do, then say yes on your neophyte platform, where you have these attachments, you haven't addressed the Nartha Nivriti, you haven't addressed Bhajana Kriya, even we could say is possibly your Sadhu Sangha is weak, but on this platform there's some faith, there's some interest in Krishna, this is very good. But don't try to make it equal with somebody on you know, this Nishta Shraddha, and that they're preaching and connected and trying to follow the orders of the guru and that and the acharyas and say that what you're doing is equal. Yes, for you on your platform is what you can do, and that's encouraged, but don't try to make it equal. You know, like that. So that's the thing. That's where it becomes cheating. So yes, in the spiritual world, you don't have to distinguish because it's all for Krishna, because the primary element of Bhagavan and that Ananda is there. On the material world, then there is no Ananda. We, as souls, we always look at that aspect of Ananda, that yes, happiness in the material world, but it's, as we discussed yesterday, it's only bringing yourself to the neutral state. You know, and if the, and that, that, even that, just the neutral state that there's no pain, but there has to be that connection with the eternal that we feel that, you know, universalness there. Then we say, yes, it was a moment. But though, I mean, if you think back, how many moments were there in your life? And those moments, they drive you. Those moments are like that. So the thing is that connection with Krishna is what drives everybody, but they think it's the external object that's driving. They're attracted to Krishna. They're driven by that, by Krishna, but they don't know. So the Ananda aspect is completely missing. The chit, they have a little bit of knowledge about how things work, and if they know Shastra, there's a little bit more on that side. But otherwise, then there's no idea. They don't know about the body, the soul, and all these things. They don't know these things. And even if they do know, they don't know about Krishna, so that chit is missing. It's not full. Sat, then they'll go, it exists. But at the same time, you have all these existential philosophers, does it really exist? It's just in your mind and all this Buddhism. So then even that becomes weak. So then it's just about how you feel. But if you go, if you take the Buddhist philosophy, how you feel is also an illusion. You don't exist. So then why we're talking about anything? But no one wants to take it that far. They only want to bring it back to it's about me and my feelings and my senses, and everything else is illusion. And so all I can trust is my own feeling. You know, so it's about me. So they've reversed due to ignorance. They put the point about it's about Bhagavan serving Krishna. It's about serving me. And then whatever situations, you know, situational knowledge and it's an application that gets us results, that removes miseries that I have, then we'll consider that of value. If it doesn't remove my misery, then no one's worried about it. Is that like that? So, yes, we make a distinction, you know, up to the point of liberation. You have to make that distinction. But once one comes onto the platform of, you know, pure bhakti, and specifically prema, then there's no difference. Before that, there's basically no difference, because it's all for Krishna and all that. So it's given that quality that's as good as non-different. But you say as though those on the platform of prema, it's non-different. Because it's just part of the thing. Just like we say, cooking includes cutting vegetables, washing them, washing pots. But in actuality, someone's a pot washer, he's not a cook. You know, our kitchen assistant, he's not a cook. But an expert chef, he knows all of them. He can go to the market, he can do everything. Is that okay? So that was, I think, I can't remember when it was. But in one of them, maybe it was in Bhagavad, then Jiva Goswami is making this point that, you know, at this point, you make no distinction between the primary and secondary. Like that. It was some time ago. But yeah. So that's where that comes in, is that Sarva Dharmam Parityaja means give up your emphasis on the secondary religious principles. And you know, focus on the primary, and then those secondary religious principles that support the primary, then engage, then situate yourself like that. You know, so that means anyone in any situation can follow that instruction of Krishna. So we see Prahlad Maharaj at 3 years old, he's doing it. You know, at 5 years old, he's doing it. You know, he's being a kid, he's being a son, he's being a student, you know. He's doing all those things, but at the same time, he's seeing it in the context of the absolute, in line with Krishna. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So then, sorry. Go ahead. Yes, so we can continue reading.
Okay. Haladhar Mishra, do you want to pick this back up then? We just read 1.5.15, so we're on the Udriti.
You can continue. My connection is not so good.
Okay. So Udriti, Srila Prabhupada, this will be his purport to that verse that Jiva Goswami just quoted.
Okay.
Srila Vyasadeva's compilation of different Vedic literatures on the basis of regulative performances of fruitive activities, as depicted in the Mahabharata and other literature, is condemned herewith by Srila Narada. The human beings, by long material association, life after life, have a natural inclination by practice to endeavor to lord it over material energy. They have no sense of the responsibility of human life. This human form of life...
Oh, go ahead. Prabhupada is saying it here.
This human form of life is a chance to get out of the clutches of illusory matter. The Vedas are meant for going back to Godhead, going back to home. To revolve...
Yeah, so the living entities, sorry, the living entities... They're not taking responsibility as the soul. You're supposed to use this time in the material world to become God conscious and go back to Godhead. And the Vedas then give that direction and instruction and tools how to do that. But they're not taking that responsibility. They think, no, I'm here to enjoy, control and enjoy. And so because of that, then there's all this problem. And without taking that spiritual responsibility, then everyone becomes self-centered. So how, like Prabhupada says, you throw a handful of rocks into a pond, then all the circles bump into each other and there's chaos. But if you throw one, then Krishna is the center and all these concentric rings come out and everyone from the top, like Yudhishthira Maharaj is the emperor of the world, down to, the chandalas living outside, in the forest, then everybody's nicely connected and everybody's satisfied. So that's the important thing, is they actually have to take responsibility for that. People nowadays talk about taking responsibility. What about responsibilities as servants of Krishna? That's the point. And everything else has to be seen as subservient to that. Yes. Please.
To revolve in the cycle of transmigration in a series of lives numbering 8,400,000, is an imprisoned life for the condition or for the condemned conditioned souls. The human form of life is a chance to get out of this imprisoned life. And as such, the only occupation of the human being is to reestablish his lost relationship with God. Under the circumstances, one should never be encouraged in making a plan for sense enjoyment in the name of religious functions.
So that would also include dhanam, janam, sundarim. So also prestige, position, the authority, whatever benefits you can get on the gross or subtle platforms. But at least, here, if you're saying this, and so it would include everything that it goes along with it. Okay. Yes, please.
Such diversion of the human energy results in a misguided civilization. Srila Vyasadeva is the authority in Vedic explanations in the Mahabharata, etc. And his encouragement in sense enjoyment in some form or another is a great barrier for spiritual advancement because the people in general will not agree to renounce material activities which hold them in material bondage.
Yes, they're going to happily accept that if I do this, I get this benefit. But then when it says, but this part you shouldn't do, or at this point in life, you should give this up, or like that they won't do. They'll only accept what's good for them and reject that which is not good for them because he's attracted them by sense gratification. And so they're not going to give up the sense. So for them, primary is sense gratification. The Vedic rituals are the secondary that gets sense gratification. So in other words, even in the conditioned state, we're still mirroring the spiritual method, in that the primary is pleasing Krishna and the secondary are the religious practices that support that expression. And in the material world, we replace that with my sense gratification. And so then these religious principles become the secondary tools to obtain my sense gratification. So that's why Prabhupada wasn't so interested in all these so-called, you know, these soft preaching aspects where you put the emphasis on the secondary thing, you know, on the music, on the new agey stuff, on the yoga, and make that the primary that they're attracted to, because then one runs the risk that as long as they see it gets them their happiness that they want from that, they'll follow. But as soon as it doesn't, they'll drop it. You know, and you can say, yes, they've come in, they've heard this, but you can go out of Hari Nam and you'll catch more people than how many are coming to your yoga studio. You know, you just go down the street, hundreds and hundreds, a few come. And they may, okay. And so that kind of aspect is there. You make yourself available and you can do. I've also seen where people have done kind of a yoga thing, but in that time of the presentation, they bring it to the direct aspects of chanting Hare Krishna and this and that. And so they brought it to the primary as the one. They've attracted them by the secondary, but they brought it to the primary in that discussion, and those people become devotees. But if they leave it at the secondary, oh, we wouldn't want to, you know, they're coming, we wouldn't want to scare them away, but then just is the goal just that you have people coming to your program and they're not Krishna conscious, but they're coming to the program, but they're not Krishna conscious, but they're coming to the program. Yeah, but what's the purpose of the program there? But they're coming to the program, you know? No, one has to be very, very careful there. Yeah. Is that? Yes. Okay, please. Anything on that or no?
Yeah, we tend to, just to what you were saying there, is we tend to base success on numbers, not necessarily on quality. And Srila Prabhupada didn't want that. He said, boil the milk. So, I mean, yes, he directly addressed it. But somehow our milk hasn't been boiled enough to actually pick up on it, evidently.
Yes, yes. And this is, he's calling boiling the milk, and this is about after direct preaching. And after direct preaching, we have so many neophytes. Now he wants to boil the milk and bring them to the Madhyama platform. It means they're as devotees following their authorities, they were doing the activities of the Madhyama. You know, just like the Uttama comes down to the Madhyama platform and does their activities, though their consciousness is at the Uttama platform. Same way the neophyte can be engaged by higher authority in the activities of the Madhyama, even though their consciousness is not on that level, and they'll advance very nicely and quickly. But at some point, you have to make them aware and conscious and bring them to that point. That means you're making them aware of Krishna consciousness and what's the higher principles in that. It's not just enough that, oh, no, they're distributing books or this and that's enough. No, that's the start. Then they should have the consciousness. Because you see how many people after, you know, if they have a choice after 3 years are still doing book distribution. 3-4 years, most go to something else. But you'll find devotees who after 30, 40, 50 years are still doing book distribution. What's their position? You'll see them. They're the ones that can give seminars on philosophy and talk about pure devotion. They're the ones that are committed to that. You don't have ones that, oh, if you're not doing book distribution, you're in Maya, you know, and there's nothing else. And everything. They're not also the ones doing. Because then it's about their prestige. See, I'm doing Sankirtan, so I'm better than everyone else. So ones that, no, this is you know, what Prabhupada wanted to be done. And this is what I can do. And so they're doing it. And they can explain it. They can give classes. They can give association. They generally, you see, they have a taste for kirtan and things like that. So that's what Prabhupada wants, is boiling the milk, you know. But, you know, nowadays so many devotees are vegans. So I don't know if you boil down almond milk or coconut milk if you're going to get the same effect. But hey, you know, you can always try.
If you boil coconut milk, you're going to get coconut butter.
Aha! And then it's fat. And then if it's too fat, and then you don't want to eat anything too fat, so we wouldn't want to do that either. Yeah, so that's the thing, is that milk's not even valued, you know. So many people are vegans when they don't, so they don't support cows, you know. You know, they politicize. So it's that's the thing, is we're boiling the political field, getting more people, you know. And just I was talking to someone yesterday, is that they were saying it's becoming very disturbing, because now they're being pressured into, you're either on this side or that side. You know, so either, you know, you're pro-Vedic or you're up to date. You know, you're antiquated, archaic pro-Vedic, or you're, you know, the modern, up to date, you know, dynamic, you know, leftist Marxist, you know, like that. You know, one or the other. You can't be in between. You can't be thinking, well, you know, I'm trying to, you know, apply it in my life. No. You know, there's pressure that there has to be this side or that side. And so then this is, so in this way, they're boiling the milk, but what milk are they boiling, you know? So that's the thing. And then it's just political. So it's not actually, Prabhupada's boiling the milk means it's boil it down so you have the thicker, you know, Krishna consciousness, that taste, because as you boil it, it gets sweeter and sweeter and the taste gets more and more like that. And so, yeah. Yes. So milk is not necessarily being boiled. Go ahead, please.
It seems that there is some churning going on, but we're more focused on harvesting the poison than the actual nectar.
Yeah. Because it's like the, you know, yes. You know, the nectar, because we're devotees, nectar is automatic. So we have to address the poison. Like, I don't know if it was there, like, and depending on the cultures and all that, but I kind of remember the parents, you know, when they'd have their programs and that, and their adult friends would come over and they're getting out, you know, things, you know, how you say, beverages for the guests. Then much of the time, because they'd have a variety of things that you could put together into various kind of beverages. And then they would say, what's, you know, they would talk to the individual and say, what's your poison? You had that?
Yes. Yeah. They still say it.
They do. Jagadish Ji, on your side, they would say that kind of thing. Yeah. So they know it's poison. They know it's going to kill you, but it's like which poison you're into, you know? You know, which mix, what proportion, you know, like that, with ice, without ice, you know, all this kind of that. So that's the thing is that, like you said, they're going for the poison. Oh, hey, look at this part. You know, this part has some foam on the top. You know, it's very light and airy, you know, like this, you know.
Guru Maharaj?
Yes.
In the history of Christian church in the 3rd century, it was a very similar situation, because it was three parts in that time in Christianity. And one part was wanted to preach very broadly and to remove all difficult rules and regulations. And second of Moses' laws. Second part was more conservative. They wanted to save all rules and they fought with each other. And third part was presented with Udo from Odessa. He wanted to preach as a form, human form, and we need to serve him with love, without expectations, only with love. And he also wanted to save rules and regulations of Moses' laws, and he joined it to the second part. But when it was a council in Nicaea, when they decided what will be main symbol of the faith in Christianity, they firstly exiled the third person. He was exiled to the Bulgaria, and he in Bulgaria unity of devotees, like it was they were like Vaishnavas at that time. And the second part was exiled. It was those people who wanted to save for similar. So see here that firstly, we can miss point of bhakti, and then second, we want to reject rules and regulations of Vedic culture.
Mm. So then that means in that case, then the soft preaching got rid of the pure preaching and the hard preaching.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Hmm. Yeah, well, it's just like you go back also farther in the Judaic than the Pharisees won out over the Sadducees. And nobody cared about the, what do you call it? The, what were they called? The Essenes. Mm-hmm. You know, they got the boot, you know. So Yeah, so that's the whole point, is by Lord Chaitanya's grace and this aspect of pure devotion, that third party, that one is the one that's supposed to come forward and supposed to be the prominent. And then you can get the proper balance between how you apply the rules if they support the pure devotion. So that cuts down on how many rules, but it doesn't mean it cuts out the rules. So we're not about cutting out rules. We're about following those rules that support pure bhakti. And in this different situations, according to how it serves pure bhakti, then we apply it. So it might be a little bit more here, a little bit less. Like someone was telling me once, they were traveling in the car, you know, on the highway, and you know, you stop at the those petrol stations, and there's a store and bathrooms, and so the person would use the bathroom, and take off their shoes and socks and everything, sprinkle water on the feet, and they put on the socks and shoes and all that. So that's unnecessary when they're traveling. But when they'd be back at the temple, they'd wash their feet when they go in the bathroom. Well, you have some of those that we're out traveling, we don't need to wash our feet, but when they go back to the temple, they don't wash their feet either. So the actual thing is the most intelligent is, I'm out, you don't need to wash your feet when you're out in these karmi places, but when I come back to the temple, then naturally I follow our old culture, and I do. Right? So then that works. So that means, you see, is that the person who's a bit fanatic about it is better than the person who just drops it completely. But the best is the one who can identify when to apply it and when not to apply it, you know? So, but that was interesting, because while you were telling the story, I was thinking, okay, is the third portion going to be the bhakti, and is that the one that's going to get thrown out first? And it was. Then, yeah. So we see is that's what's going on now, you know? That's what's going on now, is that those who it's about the pure bhakti, and so that has to become up and become stronger. Those who it's just pro-Vedic, but it's just about the rules and not so much as about the bhakti. It's more on the secondary. It's better than those who reject the Vedic. But it's still, and it's closer, it's pious. In other words, you reject the Veda, that's just impious. There it's pious, and so it can be developed. But you have to be very careful that they also get sometimes overly overwhelmed by the rules. You know, it has to be seen in context of bhakti. So what is supportive of bhakti? And it's not that we should be deciding. The acharyas have decided. They've given example how to do. You know, they've given the example. You know, like you see Narottam Das Thakur, you know, he's accepted as the acharya, though he's not coming from, let's say, a Brahmin background. But the Vaishnavas accept him as the acharya. You know, so the general rule is someone from a Brahmin family, then he does these things. And that's only because others might look at it from the bodily platform. And it also recommends that someone from a Brahmin background take initiation from someone from a Brahmin background. So that way, if their consciousness is not good, they don't look at it that, oh, my guru is inferior. You know, like we see in, you know, some other acharyas, then that problem came up. I think it was Ramanujacharya that came up. And so then, but it's actually unnecessary. If you understand the principle of Vaishnava and all that, then it's whoever's Vaishnava, they're then able to do something and take things forward. That's then the principle. So then you're going to have that balance. So that's where boiling the milk comes. One is that you're serious, but then you're able to adjust it, because that accommodates it. Then you can preach very broadly. So you see is that the one wants to preach broadly, but they're not caring about quality. It's just numbers. Then it's going to be the second group is caring about quality, but then they don't do anything. You know, so the third is that you know what the principle is, because the real quality is not following or not following the rules. It's devotional service. That's the primary. So if you understand that, and all living entities are servants of God, therefore, then you will see how to apply the rules and regulations to that person at this time. And then as they start developing, then you start adjusting the rules. But you see, is that first group wants to get rid of everything, then everybody can join. And at the same time, as you advance, you don't have to follow more rules. So it's very comfortable for everybody. So therefore, the lifestyle I'm living now, I can live that even when I'm advanced. When actually, naturally, if you were advanced and doing for Krishna, you'd make some slight adjustments. You know, like we're having discussions now before 9 o'clock. I can remember in the summer as a kid or winter when I was vacation, I don't remember getting up before 9, you know, so we're getting up early, you know, by that standard. You know, when you go to school days, we get up at 6, but when it's not school days, then 9, you know, so, you know, that was, so these kind of things, you don't leave them in place. No, because it's pleasing to Krishna doing things in the morning. Therefore, we're getting up in the Brahma Muhurta, you know, whether we're neophyte or advanced. You know, so like that, then you find how it works. If someone's brand new, you don't have to worry about that, that they're chanting, they're associating. They do that with time. Then they see devotees are doing, and then I see Bhajana Kriya. Then they start to see, oh, you guys get up early. Why? And you explain it, and then they try it. Right? But that first group where it's just going, get rid of the rules and go for the mass, they won't do that. They'll say, no, you don't have to do all those things. You just have to, you know, do this simple thing. So they can't develop. So that's the thing, is the key to it is the third group that's actually independent. They're not dependent upon the rules and regulations, and they're not dependent upon being accepted by the mass. You know, there it's Krishna says, and Krishna does, and that naturally will attract the sincere souls. And so then it will work like that. So that's the recommendation. That's very interesting that it just history repeats itself. Yes.
I was thinking that usually the people with the loudest voices are the ones on both, you know, either of those two extremes.
Yes.
So it's almost set up where the ones that actually have a proper understanding of it, it means Brahmanas are detached. They'll give the knowledge, but if people don't want to listen, they, you know, that's fine with them.
So yes.
It seems like the reason history keeps repeating itself is that if there are true Brahmanas, but there are also so many people that are just, you know, arguing on either side, they won't really necessarily listen to the Brahmanas, nor will the Brahmanas, you know, try to, or not, I mean, they'll try, but it's not, they're not going to go out of their way to try to convince these extremists in some sense.
Unless yes.
They come down.
Yes. No, that's a very good point. That's why it's the first to go, because those other two are allowed, and that's about rules or not rules, that they'll get together, that these guys are doing something else that doesn't even relate to either of them. You know? Because if you're on both sides, you're on neither side. So they're the first to go. Yeah.
Right.
So that's the weakness. It means not that's the weakness in these political platforms. That's why we as devotees would avoid using it as right. the judging point. So you were saying.
No, so then I thought, well, then in those cases, what do? They just go somewhere else and...
Yeah, like that.
Practice peacefully.
He's that guy who went to Bulgaria. So, like that, you know. Yeah, so, yeah, you just find that association that is supportive and stick to that and then see what happens. Because these other things, because it is Krishna's movement, at some point, then they can't be the ones that are the torchbearers for pure devotion, because that's not their point. So at some point, it'll go to the side. But because it is a process of abhideya, devotional service is abhideya, there's always the point of people making the effort to bring forth the understanding and appreciation and practice of pure bhakti. So therefore, that's why it may go down, and then people bring it back up again, and then with time it may go down, and like that, not just it stays, because God could make it stay, but then where's the devotion? So it's we as souls, we put in that endeavor. And so that's why you see it'll come up, down, there'll be, you know, the like that. So that's why, so those who are stable in both, then that's what we're looking for. So that association, you seek that association, that one is able to appreciate that and develop that oneself. And then that can be given to others. If you're practicing it, naturally you can give it to others.
And then it's pretty far out that sometimes when things are, you know, going seemingly well, you know, Krishna will send Shiva as Sankaracharya, for example, just to see how sincere people are and, or, you know, and if they'll get distracted or not.
Yeah, yeah, so, yeah. Because it's always, the whole point is you're always trying to boil the milk. You know, so that's an eternal principle, because whatever is going on, Krishna wants to take it higher. All the gopis came to the Rasa dance because of their affection for Krishna, but they didn't have that same affection for Krishna's devotee. You know, so it has to be Krishna and the devotee. It can't be just Krishna. So Krishna and the devotee. So therefore, then Krishna left the Rasa dance with Radharani. Then in that state, then they all came to a higher level of appreciation of Krishna and the position of Radharani, that Krishna would leave a million gopis for one. So that means she had to be outstanding, right? He didn't even take a group with them, just one. So then they all know that they're junior to this one. So then they have that respect. Now the Rasa dance can go on a higher level of bhakti or devotion or prema. And so like that, it's always increasing. It's ever increasing. So there'll always be that thing of something to test, something to boil, something to bring up, you know, like that. So it's an ongoing process. And so it's not a problem. When so focused on Krishna, then it just enhances Krishna's pastimes. Yeah.
Yeah. So we shouldn't really get agitated by these things. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Mata.
No. We shouldn't get agitated. These things come up because it's in the material world. It's just, you get, things go wrong. It's because of the material world. Now, what are we going to do about it? That's our choice. That is what we as jivas can choose. What are we going to do about it? You know, is it going to be something connect to Krishna or not? So then we always try to do something nice, you know, in the line with the acharyas, please Krishna, and that's what we do, and you stick to that. And it, like Krishna says in the, says Vyasadeva is pointing out in the Krishna book in the second chapter, then he's pointing out that the Devaki is like fire covered by ash, because you can't see, you don't know, it's hidden. Prabhupada's in the commenting on that is that then sometimes you see as the sages, then it's not favorable. So then they just stay quiet, like you talked about before. And then they just go out of the way and continue their practices until the environment's more favorable. So if you can say something and it'll have effect, you say something. But if you say something and people are going to just ignore it, why waste your time? You know, so that's what you have to see is that, is it worth saying something? And if you don't know, you say something. If it gets a good effect, okay, then you keep saying. If you say it and everyone just throws it back in your face, you know, group A and group B throw it back in your face, then you just go quiet.
I think Mataji started to say something too.
Okay. Yeah?
Guru Maharaj, I wanted to ask, can we think that the difficulties which our movement has now, it's a part of Krishna's plan how to boil the milk?
I would say yes, because thing is, as Krishna fulfills all desires, no? So some people actually sincerely think that this political direction that they're taking the movement is actually going to be supportive of pure devotional service. So they're given their time, and then everyone sees that this is stupid. It didn't work before in the 60s, before we joined in the 70s. So why would it work now, you know, 50 years later? What's changed? It's still the material world, you know? So therefore, then the opportunity is there. You try all these things. It doesn't work. Therefore, go back to what, you know, Prabhupada and the Acharyas gave. So, yes, it'll be ultimately Krishna's plan because we all have our choice. We all have that independence and we can make that choice and try to do something for Krishna. And for many, they really think that this is something, they're doing something solid for Krishna. They're purifying the movement and, you know, bringing it into the 21st century and making it accessible to everybody. They actually think like that. But they don't recognize that what are they giving to these people in the 21st century? What's the quality of it? So it's on the bodily platform. It's political. It's pranamaya. It's all about people's feelings and all this and that. You know, so then how is that going to satisfy the soul? So, you know, yes, they're making that available, but at the same time, is because of its self-centered nature, it will be used against them. So the same people that are leading this, then, or at least you know, authorizing it, they will themselves go out with it. I mean, look at Robespierre. He started the French Revolution, and then at some point they cut off his head also. That's just the way it goes. It's just you can't use you know, unauthorized systems and expect that you'll get a good system. I mean, it, you know, like that, you know, 1300 years, I mean, the third century, that third or fourth century, then these things were going on at that time also, you know? So it's always been like that. You go back in time, that's what's happening with Socrates also, you know? So, you know. So that's the thing, you know, Plato is, you know, the rules and regulations, you know, stay out of the way, you know, keep your head down and all that. Aristotle, no, you know, we got to go with what works for the people and all that. And Socrates is just talking the philosophy. So they killed Socrates. And then Plato got by because he just stayed out of the way. But Aristotle is now the father of Western philosophy. When I was a kid in school, it was Socrates. And then I was talking to some devotees, you know, that when they went to school, you know, a little bit back, then it was Plato who was the father. And now it's Aristotle. You know, and, you know, give it more time, it's going to be, what is it, that Thomas Aquinas, you know. And then after that, it's going to be someone else. When actually we know that at least it was documented by, you know, George Orwell and, I mean, was it Orwell? And Aldous Huxley, you know, they documented what actually is, you know, the modern thing. Yes, no, very good.
Guru Maharaj, if we will see to this history of Roman Empire, as you said, yes, this person who went to the Bulgaria and he created there his own community, after a few centuries, it was shown that his community was the best in Christian world, because even when one Roman saint came there, he told that their behavior and their purity is more than in whole Catholic church at that time. And we see that because he had this bhakti and this strict faith and strict following to the rules and understanding the God as a person. But the whole Christian church, they were spoiled and finally destroyed. And I have some
They destroyed that Bulgarian community, you're saying?
Bulgarian community also was destroyed after three centuries, but it happened because of some wars at that place.
Some what?
Wars.
Fires.
No, not fires. I mean, how does South pronounce it? I mean...
War. Battles.
War. Oh, war. Okay. Okay. Yes, war. Okay. Okay. So it wasn't the church destroyed them or this or that. It's just in a war they got destroyed. Yeah, that happens because that's the time.
If it happened previously many times, it can also happen with us. And I feel this... some big fear when I see the parallels between us and other religion traditions, that we very, it's very similar how we follow the way. And recently,
yeah,
recently I asked Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj, because his topic is also Dharma Glanir, and he said that no, we shouldn't repeat the way, because they didn't have a correct philosophy, clear philosophy, but we have.
Yes. So we don't have to worry that it'll be as that it'll disappear. The line of pure bhakti will always go on, but it doesn't mean the external environment won't follow the same kind of patterns like we see now. You know, you have the East and West, and you have India, the pro-Vedic, the West, where they're not into that thing, and then there's talking about a division there. And then there's actually what's pure devotion. So you're always going to have that kind of thing. But as he said, because we have the philosophy, it will carry on. And there's a better chance to correct whatever is going on between these three groups to bring them all to the actual proper standard. So we don't have to worry that it disappears because it's Krishna's movement. So this was how you dealt with them there. And then those from there, then now those people taking birth again, now they can join Krishna consciousness. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't got up to the 600,000 yet, I think, on the for the one party, you know, that the originals, so that the, I'm sure we're, you know, moving in that direction. Yeah? Didn't make sense? The 600,000 that were in Sinai? No? No? Okay.
Yeah, no,
okay.
I didn't know.
Okay, yeah, okay. Okay. Okay, so we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki.